Look, I really am sorry.
You know what? It's fine. You're just not a nurturer, but that's okay. I've made my peace with
it. What are you talking about? I nurture?
You realize that when I found out Aunt Edie had died, you didn't even hug me.
Sure I did.
No, you didn't. You patted me. It was a pat. Pat, pat, pat.
You're remembering it wrong.
No, I'm not. They told me Aunt Edie had died. I hung up the phone. You said, well, we knew that call was coming. Then you patted me like a golden retriever, and you went and watched TV. You've never been a hugger, Mike. When the kids were younger, they hugged me all the time, so I didn't really notice. But now it's very clear. I'm trapped in a hugless marriage.
You want to try a wordless marriage?
Fine. Prove me wrong. Nurture me. Look me in the eyes for more than 2 seconds and tell me that you love me.
Right now, in front of people?
Hug me, then. No, not even a hug. Just put your arm around me and comfort me. Is there a problem?
No, it's just the angle's weird.
Don't worry about weird angles the other night. Here I am, Mike. Just nurture me as you see fit. That's Pat.
All right. Well, hey, good morning. Love that line right there. I'm stuck in a hugless marriage. I mean, you know, that's probably resembling of maybe where some of our marriages, maybe it's not a hugless marriage, but we feel a little bit stuck this morning, and that's what we're going to be looking at today. My name's Kurt, and I'm really excited that you're here with us on week 3 of the Married People series, and I want to tell you right up front where we're going today. I want to give you kind of the main thing at the beginning as we walk through these next few minutes, and that is that I hope that when you leave today, you walk out of here believing that you can endure any tough season in your marriage and you can actually get back to enjoying life together. All right, you can actually endure. I mean, marriage, you know, difficult seasons come and go in any type of relationship. And so if you're married or if you're, you know, dating someone or if you're on kind of a track to be married or maybe you were married and now you're not married anymore, you know, one of the things I want us to see is that all marriages go through very, very difficult seasons. And if you're in one of those seasons today, I think some of the things we're going to talk about this morning are going to be very, very helpful for you. And if you are not in one of those seasons right now, then just thank God. I mean, just be thankful right now that that's not where you are, and then take notes, because you will be in a difficult season at some point in the future. And so, you know, a lot of churches, when they talk about marriage, a lot of marriage ministries, that they kind of go this direction. And it's not like this stuff is bad, but they say something like this. They say, you know, God gave you your spouse to beat you down and to suck the life out of you so you could become more like Jesus, right? I mean, that's just, sometimes we hear that and we're like, oh my word. Some of you are here this morning for the first time. You've been here, you haven't been in church in a long time, and you're like, honey, that's why I don't go, all right? Because I just always get this picture that marriage is about sticking a mirror in front of me and pointing out all my flaws and all the things I've done wrong, and it's supposed to help me become more like Jesus. And so the goal this morning isn't, you know, that we feel bad. It's not to lift up all our flaws, but it is to help us see that amidst our flaws and amidst our imperfections, amidst the difficult seasons of life, we can actually get back to enjoying life together when those seasons come. And we can actually have fun together. We can actually let down and relax a little bit. And so what I want to do is I want to take you into a book of the Bible that is kind of a misunderstood book. In fact, it's a book that we don't look at very frequently, especially when we're looking for encouragement. But it's kind of dark. It's a little bit pessimistic, so it reflects my personality a little bit at times. And it's called the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's written by Solomon, who's one of the wisest men that ever lived. And now let me give you the bookends of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1, life is hard. Chapter 12, then you die. There you have it, all right? I mean, that's why people don't go there. They're like, why would I read that if that's the most encouraging that it gets? But when you read through Ecclesiastes, you notice these themes. And in chapter 3, the themes go something like, there's time to be born and there's a time to die. There's a time to plant and there's a time to harvest. There's a time to mourn and there's a time to laugh. And then, you know, another one of the themes of Ecclesiastes is hey, cheer up, because soon you're going to be dead. All right, so, I mean, you know, so it's just filled with all kinds of great little pictures. And so let me walk us through a couple verses here. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 4, it says this. It says, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. And so Solomon here is painting a picture. He's painting a word picture here. And the image I want you to have in your mind is this idea of a grinder. All right, he's saying the earth is kind of like a grinder. You know, he talks about nature, the rivers and streams flow into the sea. They basically go back to the same place that they came from. You know, the sun, moon, and stars, you know, they rise and set, and basically they all end up back in the same place. He's like, the earth is just like a grinder. It's like we constantly go through it and end up back where we were. And he says, generations come and generations go. And he says, you know, the earth remains forever, and the years seem to go so slow, or the days go so slow, but the years pass by like very, very fast. And then he gets to chapter 12, and it gets a little more depressing. He says this. He says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you say, I will find no pleasure in them. All right? Because what happens, he's saying here, is the body begins to break down. All right? He says, your body is thrown into the grinder. And again, some of you are like, honey, why did I come this morning? And exactly how was this encouraging to our marriage? You know, he's talking about nature here, and he's using scenes from nature to talk about how the body breaks down. He says, you know, the man goes to his eternal home, and mourners come out and fill the streets. And then he gets this one little nugget in the middle of this book that is what I really want us to look at today and focus on today, and it's Ecclesiastes 9:9, and it says this. It says, endure life with your wife all your miserable days. No, it doesn't say that. I was just seeing if you were paying attention already. So what it actually says is the only place in the Bible it actually says exactly like this. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. All right, and so some of you are like, where exactly are we headed? I mean, we keep talking about meaningless things. Here's where we're going. Here's what I want us to see today. I want us to see that in the midst of the grind, if Solomon is one of the wisest men that ever lived, he says, the life is kind of like a grind. And in the midst of the grind, you can actually enjoy life with your wife. Guys, I want you to hear that. You can actually get back to enjoying life with your wife. You know, women, I want you to hear that. You can actually enjoy life with your husband. All right, and here's the problem. Here's the problem I see with so many couples that I talk to. And I'm not a marriage counselor, all right? I'm very clear about that with people. I'll meet with people on the front end of marriage stuff to kind of get an idea of what's going on, give them a pathway to a resource or to a counselor or whatever might help them get in a better place. But I do meet with a lot of couples, and almost every couple I meet with is stuck. All right, there's not a single couple that comes in to talk to me about something going on that isn't stuck. And so they're stuck in the grind. This is what Solomon is talking about here. And here's what's happened. I'm going to give you 7 things that happen when we're stuck in the grind. The first one is that when your marriage gets stuck in the grind, and if you're not married today, you can take notes for when you are married, or maybe you were married, and this is going to help you understand some things. When you get stuck in the grind, you turn your spouse into the grind. All right, so instead of saying, hey, I'm going to go through the grind with my wife, I'm going to go through the grind with my husband, we actually turn our spouse into the grind. All right, and when this happens, this is when, guys, you begin hearing your wife like Charlie Brown's mom. Just like, wah, 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 wah. You know, you tune it out, it's all white noise. And women, this is where you start thinking things like, man, all my girlfriends, they told me I shouldn't marry him, and I didn't listen to them. You know, and so you're just stuck in the grind. And so I hope that if this is one of the places that you are, as you walked in here today, I hope that as you walk out today, that you have a couple walkouts that can help you see that you can actually get back to enjoying life. All right, and so let me give you a couple key words that will free you this morning. All right, these words will free you. They will set you free. So if you're with your spouse this morning, I want you to pull out your index finger. All right, this is going to be fun. And I want you to point at them. Here's what I want you to say. I want you to say these words. They're going to set you free. Here's what you're going to say. You're going to look at them. You're going to go, you're fired. Just go ahead and do that. Say, you're fired. You're not my source. All right? Yeah, no, you actually don't have to repeat all that. Just, you're fired. Some of you are like, man, you're fired, woman. You are. You're sucking the life out of me. No, that's not on me, okay? That's your words if that's what you said. All right? But I want you to say, you're not my source. You're not my source. See, this is where couples get into it right here. All right? See, when you set your spouse up to be the source of all your problems, you automatically set them up to be the solution to all your problems. All right? So when your spouse is the source and the solution to all the problems in your life, that's about as stuck as you can get. Because now you're just waiting. Now you're waiting for them to change. You're waiting for them to fix something, and you begin dropping little hints to them. All right, you're not gonna, you like begin leaving things out, just hoping that they might notice. Yeah, I was really bad at this early in our marriage. When she would go to the work in the morning, she would take a cup of coffee with her, and she would leave her cup in the car, and you know, the next day she'd have another cup, and sometimes we'd jump in her car to go out to dinner in the evening, and I'd go out and I'd notice all these cups, and so I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to leave these somewhere for her to notice that they aren't where they should be. And so I'd set them on the ledge in the garage, right? And before long, like half of our cupboard was missing, right? And so one day we were getting out of the car and she's like, well, who put those there? I'm like, right, I know. And she's like, they're just in the way. And she walks right on by. I'm like, wait, you're missing the whole point. You know, I mean, I could have obviously just put them away. That would have been a nice thing. But you start leaving things because you're trying to actually change your spouse, right? When you see your spouse as the source and the solution to all of your problems, that's about as stuck as you can get. And you're trying to change them. Now, this is the only Dr. Phil moment you're going to have all morning, all right? But I'd ask the question, how's it working for you? It's probably not working well. Right? I mean, trying to change your spouse is like wasting your time. Right? It's just a big waste of time. It's exhausting. And so there's some other ways that I think we can go about this in a better way, which we're going to look at today. So the second thing that happens when couples are stuck in the grind, you begin to question your compatibility. Now, this is one of those moments where something that's very good in our culture becomes very damaging to us. It's referred to as the Facebook. Anybody like Facebook? All right, so, you know, because here's what I've noticed happens. When people get stuck, you know what they do? They think, man, I will feel so much better if I log on to Facebook and see how everybody else's relationships are. And you start reading about your friends, and you're like, oh, my word, they were made to be with each other. She had a bad day, and he got her roses. Now, it may have been the only time in her life she got roses, but you think it happens all the time. Have you ever noticed that? See, Facebook is like a highlight reel, people, all right? I'll spend time with people that are on Facebook all the time, and they will have a sucky day. And you know what? They'll post the great moment of the day, and they're like, man, life is great. I'm like, no, it wasn't. Your day sucked all day long. But see, we just like to give people an impression of what we want them to see. And so we always think, man, if I go to the Facebook, I'm going to feel so much better. Here's just a little suggestion. So if you're stuck anywhere in life, you know, with your spouse, in a relationship, at work, just get off Facebook for a while. Do like a 3-month fast and see if your life is actually a little better, if you enjoy it a little more, all right? Because when we compare ourselves to others, what we begin to do is we begin to question whether or not we're compatible. We're like, oh, man, we never took a test. We might not be compatible. And if we're not careful, we begin to process this out. We think, well, the only way I'm going to enjoy life again is if I find a different spouse, somebody who understands me, somebody who blends with me well. All right, hear this. This is really important right here. Character always trumps compatibility. Right? Character always trumps chemistry. All right? Our culture is obsessed with chemistry and compatibility, obsessed with it. All right, just out of curiosity, raise your hand if you're married to somebody you're not compatible with. That's me. A few of you are honest, the rest of you are lying. All right, listen, I mean, for Julie and I, we are not compatible. All right, when we first got married, I mean, you know, she loved to go out and dance. I hated to dance. All right, I mean, I loved going to sporting events. She didn't really like going to sporting events. You know, we'd go on vacation and she wanted to go, and I wanted to slow. She's the fourth child, I'm the first child. She would see a sign on the side of the road and she's like, oh, that's the law. That's the law. If I break that sign, I'm going to jail and God's not going to love me anymore. I mean, she just takes everything for face value. I, on the other hand, I remember going to Chick-fil-A a number of years ago and we had our food and we were walking back to the playground area and it said, no food or drinks in the playground. She's like, oh, we can't go here. And I'm like, oh, you know what they mean. See, I'm really good at interpreting what, you know, was intended behind the sign. And so she's like, no, what do they mean? I'm like, well, they just don't want you bringing like the whole tray into the playground. I mean, if you've got something in your hand, you're fine. See, I mean, we are night and day, all right? Her idea, she grew up in a family that said savings is something you put away for a rainy day. You know, I grew up where savings was the difference between the original price and the sale price. I'm like, hey, it's a savings. You know, I mean, we're just night and day on each other. Some of you have that same encounter in your home, right? I mean, I'm hearing that. So see, here's the thing. Great marriages are based on character. Character always trumps compatibility. Here's why. Because commitment, as we're going to look at in just a moment, commitment always flows out of character. It never flows out of compatibility. Number three, when your marriage gets in the grind, you begin to repeat mistakes and develop patterns. Right, maybe some of us are here this morning. Maybe we're just repeating mistakes. You know, it's not uncommon for somebody to come in and talk to me about, you know, their marriage situation, and they'll say, man, we just can't get past this issue. And here's my favorite line. They'll say, we've tried everything. And I'll be like, I bet you haven't. You know, what you've probably done is you've tried a couple things that you know about, and you just keep doing them over and over and over again, and it's not helping. All right, this is called marriage scripts right here. You know, whenever an issue comes up, like, you know, kids or sex or money or how to deal with the in-laws or, you know, issues around the house, you know, which in case you haven't noticed, the issue is never really the issue. There's always something underneath the issue. But when the issue comes up, we become actors and we just grab the script that we've always walked out. And it's like we step into the next scene and we just repeat the same lines over and over again. And it begins to develop a pattern. And you just keep repeating it, and you're like, we're stuck. We don't know how to get unstuck. This is why the book of Proverbs says this. It says, as a dog returns to vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. Now, in our home, one of the things we do with our kids is we teach our kids, hey, it's okay to make mistakes. All right? You're allowed to make mistakes. But what we try to avoid is foolishness. Foolishness is when you make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And so my hope this morning is that as a result of our time, some of us that are maybe stuck, and maybe we've tried the same things over and over, and it's not getting us anywhere, that maybe you can see that, man, I can try something different, and it might actually help me get unstuck in my relationship. It might actually get some things resolved. Because when you see a couple that's stuck in the grind, one of the things you often see is you see someone who has closed their heart. They've closed it down. And we close our hearts because we don't feel safe around someone. For me, one of the reasons I close my heart at times is when I feel judged. If I ever feel like I'm a failure in a situation, I begin to close my heart. I close my heart if I feel controlled. For my wife, Julie, you know, she'll kind of close her heart if she feels disconnected from me. In fact, that's very typical of women. And Julie and I kind of hit the general stereotypes of men and women. You know, men don't like to be controlled. Men don't like to be judged. You know, women don't, they like connection. They love connection. And so sometimes, you know, when I've processed this idea with guys especially, I've heard this line. I've heard guys say, well, I think she wants me to quit my job. I think she hates my job. And I'll be like, why do you say that? He's like, well, she just tells me, I hate your job. I'm like, I don't know that she fully hates your job. I think what she's saying is she's feeling disconnected to you. I think what she's maybe saying is you're in your job, you're more connected to your job than you are to me. And I'm shutting down, I'm closing down. See, we've always got to get to the heart of what's going on. This is why Proverbs chapter 4 puts it this way. It says, above all else, guard your heart, for it's the wellspring of life. And this morning, I want us to ask ourselves, you know, is my heart open in the relationship I'm in, or is it closed? And that's probably one of the most important questions you can ask this morning. Is my heart open, or is it closed? Because we have this innate ability to close down our hearts. A while back, there was a lady that came up to me when we were still meeting over at the school. This was very early on at Cross Point. I think we were doing a marriage series then, And she came up to me, man, she was hacked off. I mean, her head was bobbing, and you know, she came up, she's like, Pastor! And I'm like, yes, ma'am, you know, and she's like, do you know why my husband divorced me? And I'm like, well, I'm getting a little bit of a picture of it right here, man. You're telling me a lot, and you haven't said much, all right? And so I said, well, you know, why did your husband divorce you? And she said, well, I'll tell you why, because he couldn't handle my success. I'm like, all right, could we walk aside and have a conversation over here for a little bit? Would you just come over here? Could I speak into you a little bit for a few moments? She kind of looked at me, and I said, I mean, can I pastor you? Could I just kind of, you know, pastor you for like 5 minutes? She's like, okay. We walked over. I don't think anybody had ever said anything like this to her before. And so I said, you know, before I say this, I just want to make sure I have your permission to say a few things to you, because I don't want to just say this, because I don't know how well it's going to be received. She said, okay. And I said, I think I have an idea of why your husband divorced you. She's like, you do? I'm like, I do. I really do. She's like, well, what is it? I said, I think it's this. Yeah, that right there. And she looked at me, and it wasn't quite that dramatic. I was a little more gentle with it, you know. But I said, listen, I think there's something beautiful deep inside right here. I think you've got something beautiful that is great for other people. Probably was great at one time for your husband, but somewhere along the line, I mean, you have picked up a chip on your shoulder. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know who put it there. I don't know what experiences you've had that have created this thing. But you're taking care of it. And I could say that to her because I understood something about closed hearts. And so what I said to her, next to her, and this wasn't real theologically sound, I don't think, but I said, you know, you've only got one heart. And it's the same heart that loves God. It's the same heart that loves your spouse. And it's the same heart that loves your kids. It's the same heart that loves your, you know, your family and your friends and everybody that comes in contact with you. And when you shut your heart down for one person, you actually leave it in a closed condition for everyone that comes into contact with you. And I don't know where that sat with her. I mean, I never saw her again. But I think, you know, for many of us, when we get hurt, we close our hearts and we shut it down. And one of the things we have to consider is, you know, even today, today is a new day. You can begin today. If you're in a closed heart position, to begin to open that up and allow God to begin to do a work, allow that chip to get off your shoulder. Because if we don't open up our heart, what happens next is couples that are in the grind find themselves isolating themselves from other people. We begin to isolate ourselves. And I see this in way too many couples. I see this all the time. I meet with somebody and they're stuck in the grind. And what I notice is they begin to shut out any voice in their life that isn't exactly what they want to hear. All right, they begin to shut out any voice. Sometimes they'll shut my voice out. They're like, man, you're not telling me what I want to hear. I'm shutting you out. And one of the things that happens when you begin to shut your heart, you know, people out of your life, you begin to say, hey, I don't want you here. I'm gonna stay safe and not hear anything that is different than what I want to do or I am doing. And one of the things that happens, it sets in, is we begin to think, well, nobody understands what I'm going through. I can't take any input or allow anybody to speak into me because they don't really understand. And I tell you, I hear that when I'm in counseling sessions with people. And it just makes me want to bop them in the mouth. It's one of the very few times where I want to actually hit somebody. You know, I mean, I'm like, do you understand? And they're like, Kurt, come on, you've got a great marriage. And you just don't understand where we are. And I just want to bop them in the mouth. I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you think great marriages just happen? In fact, I'll even ask them sometimes, do you know why I have a great marriage? You know what they say? Julie. I'm like, well, besides Julie, all right? I mean, we actually do things that actually build us and take us to a good place. And so I want to give you a visual for this morning, all right? I want to give you an image in your mind that hopefully you'll remember when you walk out of here. And here's the picture, all right? This is our new puppy right here, our 3.5-month-old puppy, Minnie, all right? She just joined our home about 2 months ago. Now, here's what I've been discovering about puppies, all right? Everybody loves the front end of a puppy. Have you ever noticed that? Everybody falls in love with the front end of a puppy. Everybody falls in love with the cuteness of a puppy. And you know where I'm going with this, right? That every puppy has a back end. Have you noticed that? That's why when you're at the pet store with your kids and they're like, Dad, 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 can I please have this dog? You're like, no, no, remember the hamster. You don't take care of the hamster. Hamster's a lot of work, all right? Can I just say to you this morning that if you're in a posture where you feel like, man, nobody understands what I'm going through, nobody can process where I am right now, all right, please hear me on this. Every single marriage in this room this morning has a back end story, every single one, including mine. I mean, for us, it was 14 years. You know, for most couples, it hits at about 7 years because I think marriages go through 7-year cycles. In fact, the average length of a marriage in the United States today is 7.2 years. At 7 years, you know, we begin to feel a bit disconnected. We begin to feel a bit like, you know, disillusioned, like, oh man, I got to look outside if I really want to have fun and enjoy life again. You know, for Julie and I, it was 14 years. We made it through 7. We hit the wall at 14. And we had to take some evasive steps to begin to push through, get traction, to not get stuck right there. And whenever I talk to a couple that's experiencing stuckness like this, I say, you know, you've got to let the voices in your life speak into you. And they need to be healthy ones. And sometimes you're not going to like what they say, but it's true. And I know it's a lot safer to close your heart down and not listen to anybody, but you need community. This is where groups come into big play in our lives. In fact, when we're in groups, we can learn from other people. There are other people in a group setting when we're in small groups that have been down the path before. Maybe they're a little further down the road than we are. And maybe there's some things they've experienced and traction they've gained that can actually help me. I mean, there's people when you're in a group, and there are people that understand that have had teenagers. They realize, man, at some point, teenagers' brains, they just fall out. We don't know where they go. I mean, and the bigger question is, when is it coming back? You know, and so, but they can tell you it actually does happen. You know, they've been there. They actually have ways in their life that help them push through the difficult seasons that you can learn from. So we have to fight isolation. Because if we don't fight this, when your marriage gets stuck in a grind, you begin to doubt your future as a couple. When I was a kid, see, I've grown up in church my whole life. And when I was a kid, we used to have these things in church called altar calls. And if you're new to church and you've not been in church your whole life, it's probably a good thing. You know, we're glad you're here today. But let me explain an altar call to you. I used to hate altar calls. They hacked me off. They really hacked me off big time. And here's why. See, a couple times a year, an evangelist would come to our church, and they would you know, do a couple services. And basically, the whole goal of an evangelist was to help people, you know, enter into relationship with Jesus, to help people receive Jesus' grace in their life. Nothing wrong with that. And so at the end of the service, here's kind of how it went. You know, they would have everybody stand up, and then, you know, the music would start, and they say, okay, as we sing, anybody that wants to receive Jesus into their life, we want you to walk to the front of the auditorium and just stand down here. And so the music would start, and we'd start singing. Now, I was like 12 or 13 at the time, right? And so I'd look around, and it's like the same 80 or 90 people that are always there. And I'd look around, and I'm like, well, man, I know everybody here. And we've all been saved multiple times. You know, and so we're singing, and we sing another verse, and I'm like, man, we got to hurry this thing up. I mean, I got things to do. And so, you know, and then the evangelist would come out, and he'd start going after the Christians. And he'd say something like, well, you know, do you know that you know? And I'm like, man, I thought I knew, but when you put it that way, I'm not sure I know. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling doubt right here of whether I really know Jesus. And listen, I was mad at the age of 12, age of 13. I mean, it just pissed me off. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, how dare you plant a seed of doubt in my life about whether I know Jesus or not? I profess Jesus as my Savior already. I'm in relationship with Jesus. And here you are. I'd say to my mom sometimes, I'd be like, Mom, if I just walk down front, can we please leave then? I mean, I'll get in the baptistry tub if we need to do that. I mean, I just want to get out of here. And I'm telling you what, it really made me angry that those seeds of doubt would be placed in my mind. And here's the thing. Let me tell you something. For many of us in this room right now, you're right now in a difficult season of marriage. I mean, you're in a difficult season. Maybe you've been stuck there for a while. Right, and one of the things that might be going on is you may be surrounded with people that are planting seeds of doubt in your mind. And it comes across very innocently. It goes something like this. It's somebody saying, hey, you know, you really don't have to put up with that anymore. I mean, you really don't deserve to deal with that anymore. Or, you know, you don't deserve that. You deserve better. Or how about this one? He's never going to change. Or she's never going to change. And so all of a sudden, you begin to doubt the decision that you made. And when you doubt the decision, the last thing that happens is you begin exploring outside options. Outside options. Scott Stanley, he's a professor at the University of Denver, and he has a definition of commitment that I think it just hits it right on the head. Here's what he says. He says, commitment is making a choice to give up all other choices. Right? Now, I want to talk to the guys for just a second. Guys, here's the thing. Some of you are sitting in here today, and you're like, man, Kurt, come on. I mean, I don't know. I used to enjoy marriage. I used to enjoy life. But, man, it's just a grind. We are stuck, and I just don't see it getting any better. In fact, if I'm going to enjoy life again, I need to find someone else. All right. And so if that's where you are, let me tell you guys, you can enjoy life with your wife that's here with you today. You can. You can actually reclaim that. You really can. Right. Some of you, you're looking for greener grass. All right. Now, let me give you another word picture. I always think in images. All right. Here's another word picture. Where the grass is greener, there is usually a septic leak. All right. Just think about it for a moment. There always is. And it's nasty. All right. Just remember that. All right, you do not have to look somewhere else. You can actually stay home and water your own lawn. All right, you really can. You don't have to choose to go another direction. All right, so what do we do with all this? Let me give you some practicals. All right, let me give you some walkouts, some next steps. So go ahead and take out your connection card, because on the back side, a couple of things I'm going to talk about as we close here are on the back of your connection card. And if you're stuck, I guarantee you these things will help you get traction in your relationship. All right, and it may not fix it all, but you will begin to see movement, and you're going to begin to see health and healing. If you're in a season of winter, everybody wants to get to springtime, right? We want to get to the growth season. So here's a fast track. Here's how to even get started on this. Number one, second one on here, unplug from your spouse as the source of life. All right, unplug from your spouse as the source of life. And if you're not married, just take notes on this. These will be key for you later in your life. All right, you took the pledge, you took the vow, but here's what I want you to do. I want you to picture your heart like a big old jug of water, and every morning you've got to go get that jug of water filled up from the source, right? And one of the things we find in the Bible is in 1 John, John says, God is love. And so what he says is you learn to love because God first loved you. He's the source. Jesus is the source, right? We give love to people because God first gave love to us. We forgive people because God first forgave us. So you wake up in the morning, and you go to the source, and you get your big old jug of water filled, and then you see your spouse, you see your husband, you see your wife, and you pour into them. And then you see your kids, and man, some of you got a whole gaggle of them, right? You pour into them. I do too. And then you go to work, and you go to work, and you pour into the people in your work. You pour into people that are your colleagues. And here's one of the best definitions of codependence that I've ever heard. When you pour into people daily through your life and then you sit around waiting for them to pour back into you, that's codependence, all right? Because you've made them your source. You said, well, I'm going to pour into you. I'm going to sit around and wait for you to pour back into me. I know, we've got to remember who the source is. Julie is not my source, all right? Julie is somebody I pour into. My source is God. And so the first step is to unplug from our spouse as our source and plug into God. If we do this, the second thing leads to the second one, which is taking personal responsibility. It means I can now take personal responsibility for my words, for the condition of my heart. I mean, our kids are great at this, right? My kids are always like, I didn't mean to say that. You made me say that. No. You're responsible for what you say. It's a reflection of your heart. I need you to take personal responsibility. See, when I take personal responsibility for my problems instead of looking to, you know, for my spouse being the source of my problems, then I'm actually beginning to own them and getting to a place where I can get traction. Last one. Remind yourself of the decision you made when you got married. All right, we call them vows. That's why we do vows in wedding ceremonies. Remind yourself regularly of why you got married. And this is the last point. What you need to do is you need to decide today that my spouse is valuable. In fact, when I do a ceremony, about 2 or 3 weeks before the ceremony, I'll email the couple and I'll say, hey, I want you to send me a list or a narrative, whichever you want to do, of why you've chosen to marry the person you're marrying. And they'll send these back to me and I'll read them, and sometimes they're funny and humorous, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I got to edit that one a little bit. And what I do then is I take these into the ceremony and I build them into the ceremony, because one of the things I know is that the 2 or 3 weeks before a wedding ceremony are some of the most stressful points of a couple's life. And so when they're standing there at the altar, I'll actually read some of the things they wrote and remind them of why they're standing there. And then I tell them, don't make this your only list. This is a starter list. All right, from this point forward, I want you to keep an ongoing list. Gary Smalley, he calls it the honor list. Writing down anything that's honorable, noteworthy, you know, valuable about your spouse, just keep writing them down for the rest of your days. And see, here's what happens. When you hit a stuck moment, a stuck season, you go and you pull back that list. And you start reading that list, and you're like, oh, man, I can't believe I wrote that down. She's not that way anymore. No, that's not what you do, all right? Now, what you do, the list is to remind you of why you chose her, why you chose him. It reminds you of why you're doing what you're doing. You're getting a long view of your marriage, not a last event view of your marriage. And I guarantee you, you do these things, right? These will begin to help you get unstuck. All right, so it's important, you know, if you're stuck right now, or you know, if you just feel like, man, this is something I could just do to build my marriage, go ahead and mark that down. And I'm going to pray for us. And so I want to ask you to stand. And I want to pray for every single one of us this morning. And I want to pray that God would just nudge us this morning for whatever we need to do. And if you're not married, I'm going to pray that God will embed these things in your mind so that when you're in a relationship, or if you're not married, this may be answering some questions for you. All right, so let me pray for us. God, thank you that we can come into a dark room and we can explore things that we don't hear, really, honestly, in many other sectors of our culture. God, I know in this room, a group this large, there's a lot of marriages that are probably stuck in some way, shape, or form this morning. And God, I just pray that your grace would hover over this room. And God, that you would be very direct with us even right now in this moment as we're deciding our next step of what we're going to go do this week, how we're going to begin to get some traction, how we're going to try something different than the things we've been doing. We're going to break the pattern and actually get to a new place. And God, for those of us in the room this morning who maybe have been in a marriage and currently are not in that marriage anymore, God, again, I just pray that your grace would hover over this room. God, I pray that your grace would just rain down like a soothing salve on our hearts. There may be some things we're seeing right now of why that marriage is no longer in place. And yet, God, what we can do is say from this day forward, God, I'm going to begin to turn to you as my source. And so, God, I just pray that you would help us to see in these moments as we sing this last song that, God, you are our source and you're a God who actually pursues us. And maybe we be the kind of people who pursue our loved ones and, most importantly, our spouse from this day forward.